The name of the new novel is Trace. It is a Joe Gunther novel, and it's always a pleasure. You always know it's fall when Archer Mayer comes out with a new book. We are thrilled that he is here. We are thrilled to tell you that he will be at Northshire Bookstore in Manchester Center, Vermont, tonight at 7 o'clock. And it is a great pleasure to welcome Archer back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's lovely to be compared to a dead leaf hitting the ground.
Not exactly where I was going with it, but I understand.
I'm so sorry. I understand. I misunderstood.
This is fascinating to me because the thing I love about your books is you're always trying to, and I think this is what makes helps you stand apart, I think, from many of your peers, is that your books all they have a message. You're taking an issue and you're looking at something and you're examining it. What is it? There's a lot going on in this particular novel,
yes,
in Trace.
This one's jam-packed.
It's very
right.
Busy. Yep. We've got things going on all over the place.
Yep.
So for you, what was sort of the nugget, the issue that you wanted to say, okay, let's look at this?
Curiously, it had to do with sort of workplace demographics, which sounds extraordinarily dull. So I tried to liven it up with a lot of derring do.
Yeah.
As a cop, which I'm now semi-retired, but in my prime, I functioned as an investigator in southeastern Vermont, as you know. And it occurred to me in that context that when I would watch TV or go to the movies or even read or novels or write my own novels, for that matter, it was always one case, one cop, or one squad. And that was the focus. Well, the reality was, of course, that on a good day, I had 13 cases going simultaneously, and in a bad situation, 20 cases, and it was fine. I mean, everyone else did, too. It was a standard protocol. And as you progress through each and every working day, you would sort your way through this air traffic control problem, and you'd get it all sorted out by the end. And, of course, they'd be replaced by more cases. It was just a state of life. And I wanted to address the disconnect, the popular misconception, if you will, of this very linear world that fiction had presented us. So I decided to remove Joe Gunther, my primary investigator in the series of books, a little bit, give him sort of a backstage role, and take three of his investigators and assign each one of them a separate case and put them all in the same book so that you would get a little bit of a not as chaotic, not as cluttered, but nevertheless a sense of a full traffic court where cops have to do various things at various times in competition with one another and use each other as sounding boards, you know, to their own best purposes. And that's the book in a nutshell. We go from case to case to case, back to case to case to case, back to case to case to case, and you have to keep them all lined up. You have to keep them all straight in the reader's brain and cross-linked because they compare notes with each other. So it was kind of a fun process because how do you make this into music for the reader? That was the challenge.
And oh, by the way, there's the geographic element it, that you're Vermont, Massachusetts, and Albany, New York, Springfield, Massachusetts, we should note. And so there is all of this, there's that cross-pollination there as well of how of these places work together.
I, as you well know, since we go back quite a few years, I have one of the more complicated minds you're going to encounter. So why should I simplify things by just having three guys in a room with three separate cases all based in Vermont? No. So you're right. I went to three separate states for three separate cases. And then they go back and forth because they are Vermont law enforcement, so they have to come home to roost. So, yes, you're quite right.
Now, I will say, I think this is my favorite of your novels, and I say that because it's a terrific novel and also because you mentioned me in the acknowledgments.
As well I ought, Joe, because you spent many an hour driving me around your fair city and exposing me to its dark underbelly.
Now, I learned, I think I learned as much, if not more, than you did in that process. I thought it was fascinating of how to watch how you work. So the premise for the listener is that that you call up and say, I'm thinking of doing this thing and putting my characters in Albany. What do I need to know? So then we just drove around for a bunch of hours and looked at different stuff and kind of got an idea from the city. And then I hooked you up with some other people that know the city better than I do and say, here you go. But what you were looking for is really interesting, because and to see how your mind works with that and what you can do with it, because it really is quite intricate to know what it is, A, that you're looking for, and B, how it suits the character and ultimately the story.
It's a process of cross-pollination in more ways than one. You and I spent many happy hours together. I did the same thing with several different people, and depending on what they do for a living, I ask them specified questions having to do with that occupation. But more importantly, I over-research. I always over-research because I don't write down a plot. I don't really have a firm idea of what my character is going to do in that particular environment. Not only where she's going to go, but what she's going to do in this instance. And therefore, by overexposing myself to information, A, I feed my own ignorance and curiosity, which I just park away in my brain. But B, it means that when I write without my plot, and the book and characters begin to direct me right or left or in between, I have so much information in my head pertaining to that overall activity that I can let the character pull me around to a certain extent, which makes, therefore, the actions natural to them. And I still have, call it the data, available to make that a real and vibrant background on which they can operate.
It depends on who you ask, and I believe we had this conversation, but it depends on who you ask. But often, upstate New York, this part of New York, Albany, and say going from Albany north into the Adirondacks, is often lumped into New England. We think of it as part of New England.
Yeah.
At least Yankee Magazine does.
Yes.
So if they do,
it has to be
reality.
Exactly.
And so do you find that is there a, because we are all, at least for the moment, blue states. Do you see that there are very much commonalities between Springfield and Albany and where you're looking at in Vermont? Or are there huge differences and chasms that make it so that you want to explore those other places?
I would say there's more commonality between Springfield and Albany than there is between those two and Vermont, with this exception, and that being the sense of feeling beleaguered. Now, Springfield and Albany are urban environments with a lot more people than virtually in the entire state of Vermont. So one is distinctly rural, where the other two are not. So that's going to be a significant contrast, both in terms of racial diversity, but also in terms of economic pressures. That being said, we, all of us, feel ourselves somewhat in the backwaters. Let me give you a little story as to one reason that I chose Albany as a background. So I was attending a conference in town, and I'm with my wife and my agent and others, and we're sitting around a table, and I'm looking at outside table, so I'm looking around. I'm saying, you know, I love this town. This is great. I got to put Albany in a book. And the universal horror that greeted that comment was really quite telling. I mean, they just said, what? Albany? What? You're trying to sell these bloody books, not just write them. What are you, on crack? And I went, no, I'm sorry. This is going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a lot of pushback. The point being, as I described it and won my argument, guys, this city is filled with my people. And that answers your question to a certain extent.
Sure.
I mean, none of the people in Albany would really transpose, you know, comfortably into Vermont. But nevertheless, their sense of second-class citizens in some cases, or whatever, however you want to phrase that, exists and is real.
So for you, as the author and as the creator, how do you define your people?
My people are the unsung heroes. They're the working grunts. They're the people that, in effect, probably make more of the United States tick than the people who presume leadership and ownership. And you can see a lot of this in the recent elections. And I mean, I'm a well-educated, privileged fellow, so I can hang with members of my class and see a universal deer in the headlights, stunned look on their face at the result of the latest elections. I personally, however, who hang around with cops and rescuers and firefighters and others and attend death investigations, you know, by the hundreds over the years, this came as no surprise whatsoever. The anger, the frustration, the sense of, hey, I'm a human being too. I'm an American too. I'm standing on the sidewalk too. What about me? This kind of frustration and anger I've seen and spent time with, witnessing, chronicling. But I'm a writer. I'm an old reporter. I'm a historian by training. So I know to just observe and to take notes. I don't get wrapped up in these kind of discussions, but I sure as hell notice them and I take note of them. And thus, I guess people like my editor and my agent and my wife have noticed that I am more closely aligned to these folks because I've got their pulse more than I do the people drinking French wine and eating soft-shell crabs.
You mentioned this at the beginning. On the front jacket of the book, it says Trace, a Joe Gunther novel. But Joe is really off the sidelines a little bit. And so we, Sammy Martins, Lester Spinney, Willie Kunkel, you give them their time. Is there ever for you a thought of, well, okay, I can't leave the main guy out too much because that's why people want to know what he's up to.
Yeah. This is a family to me. People will often ask me, 28 books into the Joe Gunther series, when are you going to quit this series? So the question becomes, well, okay, who are we talking to here? You really hate the series? Stop reading.
No, I don't.
But generally, no, it's not that. It's genuine curiosity as to how comfortable I am keeping company with this group of people for so many years. The answer is quite simple. They're in my head. They are my head. They are my way of analyzing and experiencing life. I don't remain static with them. I shift them around, and each one of them has a different outlook and perspective on life. And thus, now that I write in the third person narrative form, I can move one to the left and another to the right and give the other one center stage and examine the life and current events and whatnot through that person's eyes. And then I, next book, I shift things around again. And it gives me an ever refreshed view of my environment. So why would I want to leave the very company that gives me all the insight to the world around me that they do?
You know, here's an example. Lester in this book takes on a cold case, and that's a phrase that I've heard a lot, and I know what it is, but I found it fascinating to read of sort of the frustration that comes with that, and also the work that comes into those cases, where you get around to the point of, okay, we've done right now everything that we can do, and let's just hope that someday there will be something that we find out that will help us do a lot more.
There are a lot of aspects to that really are quite intriguing, Joe, because part of them has to do with just pure logistics.
Right.
I mean, in my day, you run a case, you put it together, a lot of problems with it, perhaps, a lot of frustrations, but by God, you took it down, you sorted it out, and then what's the punchline? Pending, undetermined, no result. It's incredibly frustrating. So when someone then wants to open that back up, the response in yourself is somewhat paradoxical. In a way, you don't want to go back. And so if an investigator comes out of nowhere and says, you know what, I may have something here, part of you is actually reluctant to open that can of worms again because the end result was frustration. Who's to say that that won't be the end result yet again? So the newcomer comes and says, ooh, I can't wait to open this can of worms again. And you're thinking, oh, my God, I don't want to go there. But then again, you're a born investigator. That's why you're on Earth. That's how you get paid. So there's an element of seduction that needs to take place between the newcomer and the old dog in solving a cold case.
And you have to, at some point, admit the defeat, admit the failure of not getting it right the first time.
Yeah, And which that's the bear, because you're quite right. If indeed the lack of conclusion stemmed from not good police work, now you're quite right. That's a scab to pick.
Now, the other thing, too, that I just find fascinating about it is that how, because we're told in many fields, but in your field as an investigator, that you know, don't make it personal. It can't be personal. Well, it's going to be personal.
It's always personal.
It's always personal. Everything's personal.
Oh, yeah, you bet. You bet. You bet. And that underlayment of oh, no, you're not supposed to do that. Just heightens the irritation and aggravation. You're quite right. And so, in a funny kind of way, when you're faced with that situation, and we've all been there where you reopen something that other people wished you wouldn't, you've got to be extraordinarily diplomatic and frustratingly roundabout in order to get where you want to go. And your own passions are on the table, too. So it can be quite dicey. And if your personality isn't perfect for that role, you could be in a real trouble.
As a longtime reader of the series, I have to say that this idea of looking into these characters is really fascinating to me, because, you know, usually they're bit players. But to spend time with them and get to know them was really gratifying for the reader, and I assume even for the author of to get to know them better.
Oh, that's one of the reasons I stick with the series as long as I have, is because I learned a lot from having looked at previous series. I don't read fiction much anymore, but I certainly cut my teeth on it back in the day. And what one thing that I traced, subconsciously probably, was the vitality of those characters. How alive did they continue to be, or was the writer running out of gas? I am delighted to see 28 books later to hear and to see comments like what you just said, which is, this is my favorite to date, or Mayer has never been better than he is in this latest book. That's the direction you want to head in, and you can only get there by constantly refreshing and challenging your sense of the reality of your characters. What do they have to bring to bear? Do they still have, you know, life and blood and curiosity to keep them motivated? And that's key.
I can only assume that the 28th book is out, the 29th book is almost done, and the 30th is in the works.
Right on all counts, yes. I am editing 29 as we speak.
So that's good news.
Yes,
that's good news,
yes,
for
indeed.
All of us.
For me, certainly.
The brand new novel is Trace. It's a Joe Gunther novel, but all the other characters, too. And there is going to be a big book launch and party for Archer Mayer at Northshire Bookstore in Manchester Center, Vermont, tonight at 7 o'clock. You can find out more information about that event by going to northshire.com. Northshire.com tonight at 7 o'clock. And if you miss him there, he'll be all over.
Oh, yes.
Be everywhere.
Just go to archermayer.com.
That's right. Archermayer.com. And you can follow his wanderings. Archer, it's a great pleasure. Thank you always for coming in and for a beautiful book and just for a great experience. I thank you very much, as always.
A real pleasure, Joe. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, Archer Mayer's new novel is Trace. He'll be at Northshire Bookstore tonight at 7 o'clock, northshire.com. Or archermayer.com for more information. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.